come, draw close, and feel the power of the Herd Stone. Your best location for Warhammer Fantasy Battle lore, hobby, and gameplay discussion. All right, well, welcome. Today is the first episode of The Herd Stone. This is a podcast that we plan on being monthly. We might have bonus episodes other than that, but we plan on being monthly, coming out the same day every month. We are going to do lore. We're going to do gameplay. We're going to talk about Army book reviews, Black Library book reviews. So we're going to do all those types of fun things. Today's episode was actually the third that we've recorded, so there's going to be two more after this that are out of order. We also had some recording issues, so apologies for any of that. But whatever brings you today, we hope that you enjoy getting to know us as we hang out. And we leave it to you today to determine who of us is the grognardiest of grognards as we gather around the Herdstone. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of the Herdstone. My name is Ryan. I'm hosting, and I'll let the other guys who are around the table introduce themselves.
Yeah, my name is Mike. Go by Hot Tub Mike online and in the Warhammer Fantasy Battles community here in Texas. What all should I tell the people, Ryan?
Yes, user Ravenclaws from the Warhammer Fantasy Discord asks how we all got into the hobby.
I got started in Warhammer Fantasy Battles back in the early 2000s. I started playing 6th edition. I learned it from a friend of mine's older brother and played 6th edition, played Bretonians, Empire, Vampire Counts, Dwarves, some of those guys, and then continued playing on through 7th, into 8th, got into more of the Grand Tournament scene here in Texas and 8th edition, developed a pretty solid community, would play every Friday night here in the Houston area, and traveled to the GTs around the state and in the region, and continued painting and playing and hobbying after the end times, and everything kind of came to an end in 2015, and I keep things alive these days by playing with our podcast host here every so often here in the Houston area, and hobbying and building more armies. That's kind of the state of things with me. How about you, Evan?
My name's Evan. I go by Durger on the Discord. I've been playing Warhammer Fantasy since late 5th edition. Got into it right before the edition change happened to 6th. Played many years with my buddies off and on all the way through high school and college. Stopped playing for a brief amount of time when when Age of Sigmar was released. My buddies and I got back into it probably 3 or 4 years ago, and have kept playing since.
I'm Kerry. I go by KMorris27 on the server. Got into the hobby back in about 2002, when in or around when Dark Shadows was coming out in 6th edition. And I was one of those people who couldn't really settle down to a single army, so ended up getting a couple of boxes of everything. Very much following whatever was being released, got every army book, and tried some of the local clubs and things, but it's a bit difficult when you're 12, 13, everyone else in their 40s, and there's a little bit of a steep learning curve. Carried it on through college, sort of just reading lore and having packs up all my models. Then the world ended. I did very much enjoy the End Times lore, which isn't the most popular position to take. But then after college, got very into buying all the things that I'd wanted when I was a lot younger, and fleshing out those armies that might have only had half a dozen models, until ended up with quite a wide collection of armies. So I can now invite people around and say, what do you want to play? And I have that. I'll get it off the shelf. You can play as that. Do you want any help writing the list? So it's nice being able to act as a sort of one-person club, almost.
You say almost. Kerry, tell us what army you don't have.
I have all of the official Games Workshop armies. I'm currently eyeing up what would be my 26th separate army, because I've got into the armies project stuff, and so the unofficial fan-made army books, and I'm also working on a couple of my own army books to flesh out some of the Southlands human factions that aren't really ever explored, because I think it's a bit of a gap in representation. Most armies.
Very cool. Well, as I said before, my name's Ryan. I'm in the Houston area. I'm Kugelfang52 on the Discord. And I got into the hobby when some buddies, I guess they played. I actually first got introduced into 40K. Did not grab me, so I didn't get into that. And then I played once before actually leaving the country for a while. And I loved it. So when I came back, I wanted to get into it, and I did. And I played with my buddies up until, and that was through 7th, and then into 8th, and then played with them up until End Times, at which point they all quit and went to other games. Then at the very end of 2019, I was just really hankering for awesome hobby and awesome games, and trying to get back in. I wanted to find and start a community, so tried to reach out on Discord and on other places, try to find people. So started doing that. Then I moved to Houston and was very fortunate to be able to have Mike and others to play with. So that's my hobby journey. So that's a little bit about all of us. We're going to be doing some user questions today. Today's going to be an introductory podcast. We're going to do some games related to Warhammer Fantasy. We've already said how each of us got into the hobby. I'd be interested in knowing what aspects of Warhammer Fantasy draw you in the most. What is it that you enjoy the most? Are you a gamer, hobby, lore, or something else, or some sort of mix? So, Kerry, what about you? Which one of those is your favorite?
I very much enjoy the variety of different sort of factions, cultures, races that you have to play with within the Warhammer world, and really being able to collect things within that sandbox, write your own lore around your guys. What you find with a lot of fantasy settings, I'm going to be a bit generic here, is that there is a set way for elves to be. There is a set way for the humans to be within the sort of sociocultural system they're playing with. And you don't really have that in Warhammer. You have a lot more nuance, a lot more grey areas, both of morality, but also in terms of just how society fits together. It feels a lot more grounded. And you can really sort of get into a discussion, as we see on in our lore section, of why is this happening? What could happen spinning off of this? And really, it boils down to, we've played the game. What does that mean if we're going to contextualize that within the universe?
All right, really cool. What about you, Mike?
Ryan forgot to tell us that he was also the Reddit Warhammer Fantasy Battles super mod. Are you the only moderator of that?
Yes. No, there's actually one who isn't active.
You know, Ryan's in charge of Reddit Warhammer Fantasy Battles and also our Discord, so he pretty much runs part of the Warhammer Fantasy Battles internet.
What a tyrant.
It was a mistake. It was a mistake. Never should have happened.
For me, I enjoy all the aspects, the lore, the hobbing, and the gameplay. When I was younger, my imagination was a little bit richer, and kind of the lore, you know, was really appealing, reading the army books. My local Barnes & Noble actually had a lot of Black Library. I was very fortunate in the early 2000s to really collect a nice collection of Black Library books in print back when they were coming out for Warhammer Fantasy Battles. And as I got older, you know, I really, really kind of started really enjoying the 2,500 point kind of 8th edition tournament standard gameplay. And so of all the things that I enjoy about Warhammer Fantasy Battles, actually showing up at a table with my army and getting a game, you know, a good level game in is the most enjoyable.
What he means is beating me down as last night was an absolute slaughter as his VC destroyed my Lizardman.
When I say, like, I guess a high quality game, I mean, it's like sometimes you play someone who's never played before and it's just like, you know, it's just a little different than playing like another guy who's been to a lot of GTs, and it's just a different experience, and it's a lot of fun.
Evan?
I'd say probably the spectacle, like just putting your armies across from each other, especially if they're two like fully painted armies, it just looks so awesome. And like my imagination just runs wild, just like it did when I was a kid when I first started playing. So I think that's it. I think a Warhammer fantasy table set up with terrain and two well-painted armies is like the top for wargaming for me. And obviously that, you know, brings in other aspects as far as hobby and lore and the narrative games and all that sort of stuff. But I'd say just looking at the table and seeing that is the highlight for me.
Now I'll go ahead and second that. For me, it's also the gameplay has always been what drew me. I did not want a hobby. I just put in the minimal effort. Now I actually really enjoy painting and working on that and improving in that. But it's still the tabletop stuff. And it's been only recently that I've actually gotten interested in the lore and reading the Black Library books or whatnot. And even before this, I've even very rarely read the army book section outside of, you know, the rules. So mainly gameplay, but all of that led me to deeper interest in the rest. Before we move on to the games, I'll do one more question. So what armies do you play, and how did you choose your armies? We already heard a little bit about this from Carrie, about how he chose his. What about the rest of you?
I started with Empire. I can't remember what drew me to them when I was a kid. But, of course, I painted all of them in the box art Talibime colors and everything. So I've got a pretty large, I don't know, 5,000 plus point Empire army that's got miniatures that I painted when I was 11 years old still in it. So that was my first army. And then when 6th edition came around, I played some ogres for a while, played them through 7th and 8th, as well as the Empire. And then towards the end of Warhammer Fantasy's lifespan, I was working on a Bretonian / Vampire Counts Mousion army that kind of stalled out when End Times came around. And I actually kind of finished that up in the last year or so here. And then I also have a more traditional Bretonian army that I've been working on. Oh, and I have Beastmen. Forgot about that.
Everybody forgets about Beastmen. It's okay. Right. They're not important. They barely exist.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I guess it would be broken down into kind of phases of my life. When I first got into the hobby when I was like 11, you know, it was really kind of a patchwork kind of thing. The very first army I started collecting was Wood Elves, and that was back when all that was available was like 3 blister packs on the store wall of metal figures, and then like 1 plastic box of Glade Garter. I guess they were just, you know, Wood Elf archers at the time. And I quickly moved away from that. I collected some dwarves, finally kind of made 6th edition armies for Empire, Bretonnia, and Vampire Counts. Played those in the 7th, had a lot of fun with it. As I got a little bit older, I started collecting older models. And as I got better at painting going into my more adult years, I kind of stripped a lot of those old armies I had and repainted them. And so nowadays in 8th, I play Empire, Vampire Counts, Dark Elves, Bretonians, and Beastmen, and Goblins. And the way I kind of came up with that was when I was playing in 8th and starting getting into the tournaments, you know, I was playing Dwarves and it was very boring and nobody was having a good time playing me. And so I said, well, I'll make a Goblin army, like, you know, that's probably the least offensive thing to play.
And like, fun for everyone. Yeah,
like, it, you can't, it's probably, you know, it's impossible to complain. Well, I guess it's not impossible to complain, but you know, it's probably the most user friendly army, Orcs and Goblins, and everyone has a good time usually with it. So that's
absolutely,
that's kind of what I landed on towards the end of the tournament scene. And I also have a Beastman army, of course, because you know, Beastmen are the best.
For me, I started out getting the Battle for Skull Pass with a roommate. He was definitely not into the game as much as I was, and so I like wanted to paint every night and then wanted to play, and he was like two nights and he was like, well, we can do something else, and I was pretty swiftly obsessed. Anyway, I had the orc side of that army, and so I got into orcs, but then I was like, you know what's really a lot cooler than orcs? Empire. And so I did Empire, and then and the reason that I did those two is one of the guys that I played with already played Wood Elves, which is what I would have loved to play. And so my third army was Wood Elves, so I jumped into them. And speaking of Wood Elves, I would just like to point out for everyone that Mike said that his first two armies were Wood Elves and Dwarves. And I think that should be noted, and we should all remember it anytime he makes a take on Discord or whatnot.
Yeah, well, to be clear, I only played Wood Elves and Dwarves when I was 11, and I didn't realize they were so horrible to play against.
Anyway, from then, I from that point, when I got getting closer towards 2012 period, I got Lizardmen, I started collecting Beastmen, and then the End Times came about, and that was the end of that for me. Since then, when I've jumped back in, I don't have the Empire or that original Orc army. I actually traded them for other things, but when I got back in, I got VC, I've got some Warriors of Chaos, I just started Skaven recently because, I don't know, Storm Vermin look cool, and they looked interesting to paint, and looked like fun, and they have random rattling guns, and who doesn't love rattling guns? Yeah, I pick my armies, I think, based on looking at them and deciding if there's a playstyle or some units I want, and I almost always exclude some units from what I want. So there's always like, I want Wood Elves, but no Tree Spirits, which is the way I played Wood Elves, and which is, by the way, in 8th, the absolute meanest and worst way to play Wood Elves, which is why I don't get out my Wood Elves anymore. So anyway, that's a little bit about me. We weren't sure if another one of our buddies was going to be able to jump on, but he was able to. So Brian's here, and we'll just ask him to tell us a little bit about himself and how he got into Warhammer.
Before I start, I just wanted to ask, it's funny that you say that you played Wood Elves and excludes Tree Spirits. Don't you have an exclusive Tree Spirit army that working on at the moment?
Never the two shall meet. So yes, my Tree Spirit army is very spiteful, and they do not like that the Wood Elves are there. So it is entirely Tree Spirits, which, by the way...
Two separate armies.
Yes, two separate armies, and also the worst way to play Wood Elves in 8th edition, which is the edition that I think all of us play. So, all right, Brian, go ahead, take it away.
Yeah, no problem. I started with Warhammer Fantasy, I want to say around 4th edition, 5th edition. It started, you know, just going to the comic shop and seeing D&D books and going there for magic cards. And I remember seeing a few games being played. We were incredibly interested. We just didn't know where to start. It's all very, when you're a kid, when you're like 8 or 9 years old and you see all the models and you see all that type of stuff, it's very overwhelming. So we chatted a bit, and then we got directed over to the, I don't think I'll ever see another one of these again, but it was the Wall of Blister Packs. It was 10 yards of floor to ceiling blister packs for not just Warhammer, but for like
smell?
Other miniature games and stuff like that, or like other sellers. Oh, right. I want to say the first model I bought was a Wood Elf Glade Guard blister pack command. The command for the blister pack for the Glade Guard Command. And since this was 4th and 5th edition, I really fell in love with the early Wood Elves who, you know, in later editions, they kind of, they're kind of like the Sylvan Elves, right? From D&D. But in the earlier Elves, they're kind of like High Elf settlers that pushed into the forest or whatever. So they look more like High Elves who had been roughing it for like a week.
Unshaven,
if you can imagine a High Elf roughing it for a week.
They still don't have any stubble, but, you know, they're rough.
Right. Yes, they've gathered a few leaves by that point. And from there, I want to say that we played for probably about 2 years. My two buddies that I played with, one picked Dark Elf, one picked High Elf, and then I picked Wood Elf. And we didn't really have an opportunity to really exploit the armies to our fullest extent because we picked up the rule book and we picked up the core books and we rolled dice and we played just... we butchered the rules. I know we butchered the rules, especially looking back on it and playing games as an adult. I know we were just flying by the seat of our pants, just rolling dice, killing models, basically. I went strong for a good 2-3 years there. I went strong with the lawn mowing business, and I did everything I could to get whatever money I could get to purchase the stuff that I want. So I ended up with a forest dragon. I ended up with tree men. I still have the forest dragon, and I still have the I know a lot of people, some people prefer this version of Durthu. I do not. The metal version of Durthu I do not particularly prefer, but you know, that seems to be a contentious point on the Discord server. But whenever I returned about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I really fell in love with the Kreenskins and the orcs and just the dumb accent and the dumb stuff that they do and the way that they talk and the way that they act just really speaks to me as a person, you know? And so I jumped into Greenskins. I think I got a battalion box just as they were like selling out on Amazon, and because I haven't been able to find another battalion box of that kind, which is a shame.
Great.
Because those Greenskins battalion boxes were awesome. Yeah. And I even missed out on the collecting Greenskins Age of Sigmar box where they were just trying to empty their shelves. GW was trying to just package their stuff and empty their shelves. I even missed out on that box. But I picked that up. But that was about the time I had a kiddo. So I had these, you know, dreams of painting and collecting while the kiddo was sleeping as a baby and stuff like that, but that's not how babies work. So all of that stuff got shelved for a very long time again. And then about a year and a half passed by and I finally really jumped back into the hobby. I found the Discord, and since then I've tried to participate in all the stuff that I can, and I've really enjoyed seeing the Discord grow and seeing just everybody's beautiful armies that they do, and played a few games and I had a very good time with Mike and Ryan
seeing everybody's. Thanks, Brian. He also we can get in games with him. He's down in the area where Mike and I are, and we got to see him for a tournament that we organized. He mentioned the Discord, and what he didn't mention is that last year he won the NXL's WA, one of the users sponsors it. Is that right? You won, right? Yeah. So
I did. Yes. I did a boar themed Greenskins list called the Bloody Tusk Boys. And, it was all centered around I was tired of not having the Black Orc characters that I needed. So I took the Age of Sigmar, Iron Skulls Boys or whatever, Age of Sigmar Underworld's Iron Skulls Boys, and turn them all into Black Orc characters, which is awesome. I would recommend that to anybody who's looking to fill out their characters to look to Warhammer awesome. Underworlds
absolutely.
For their stuff.
And we just actually finished the second year of NXL's WA, so I know there were some amazing entries. Evans was a fabulous Bretonian army.
Oh, thanks.
Brian's did Goblins this time centered
definitely
around the Ragnarok. It's pretty fabulous. I'm glad I don't think I am judging this year, so I'm actually happy about that because it was super stressful last year.
Brian, I believe you spent your prize winnings on that Iraq.
I did, yeah. I bought it, and then I was too intimidated to paint it for the better of a year. So I figured, well, what better time to jump in and cut my teeth learning to airbrush than to do a bunch of goofy goblins and
out,
a big,
awesome.
Big spider.
I'm really proud of it.
They're both great. You can go and you can, if you do want to join the Discord, there's a link on the Reddit page. You can find the Discord. Feel free to join. We're happy to have you. We're a friendly community. We have a lot of painting contests every month. Has an informal, easy to join painting contest. We have all sorts of stuff going on, and we'd love to see anybody that's interested in Warhammer there. But now we get to have a little bit of fun. We are going to play a Warhammer game, but as we've kind of discussed, Warhammer in 2015 was ruthlessly murdered by GW, but we here are keeping the spirit alive. And honestly, I think all five of us, even if GW did nothing more with fantasy, we would all continue and we would all still take part and we would all still be, you know, doing Warhammer. But we know that a couple of years ago they announced the old world. So we are going to take this down. I'm going to write it down and we'll see how our prognostications go. We're going to play an over under game. I'm going to give you a number and you're going to tell me whether you're going to take the over or the under on this number for the old world. Okay. Any questions about how this game works?
No.
Yeah, for those of us that don't have crippling gambling addictions,
okay.
What does
so,
the over and under actually
the over
mean?
Would be you are placing a one Skaven slave bet that the number here would be over whatever number I give. And then if you take the under, you're placing a Skaven slave bet that it would be that whatever the question is will happen under that number. So with the first one, I think you'll get a hang of it. Everyone will see what it is. So the first one we'll start with is the number of the old world factions that will exist at the moment of release. So the number of old world factions that are going to exist in this game upon release. And I have the over under at 9.5. 9.5. Are you going to take the over or the under? Okay, Evan, I heard you make an sound, so that means you get to give your answer first.
I'm going to go under. I'm going to say under. Do I have to give an explanation?
A small one or something if you think that's important.
I feel like they're going to release these. They're probably going to do like campaign book style. That's my feeling. It's going to be like certain armies squaring off each other in kind of like a narrative campaign. And so they'll have rules for each of those factions, but it won't be expanded beyond that until they, you know, do it the next book or whatever. That's kind of my thought.
Okay. Mike, do you have any opinion or thoughts? What's your over under on this?
I'm not sure exactly how we're defining with regards to like how many army books are going to be at release or how many factions are going to be alluded to.
How many
that are going to
actually... He's already hedging here.
I know exactly. How many actions will they how many factions will they release rules for that you could play upon release?
I'll go the under. I think as it was in previous editions, you could use the previous edition's army book to play the next edition. So it was common to be using 6th edition army books in 7th or 7th edition army books in 8th. But I think now I don't know that any of these 8th edition army books are going to translate. So I think they're going to have to release whole new rule sets at the very beginning. But I don't think they're going to have more than 9.5 at the initial release.
All right. Carrie, are you going to be brave enough to take the over, or are you taking the under as well?
Definitely under. There's no way Games Workshop, with the way they run release schedules, would start with over nine and a half products up front. I mean, certainly after the last fortnight where they've managed to get the balance of a 40K book particularly skewed, I think they're going to be even more cognizant of balance issues if they dump multiple books at once than they might have been even a year ago.
You're speaking of the Leagues of Votan, is that right?
Yes, so we've got a 40K book come out and the points corrections were out before the book was on general release. But then we did get a very nice James Workshop in-character video to apologise, which was complete with reference to Zotes. Everyone loves Zotes.
What about you, Brian?
I am going to... You know what? I'm going to take the over. Let's go through the factions real quick. So we have the three elves. That's three. Then the two good men. Lizardmen, Skaven. That puts us at seven. Orcs, eight. Chaos, nine. Who else would I accept? Vampire counts, 10. Tomb Kings, 11. I don't think that they would make an announcement for the old world and say, bring your old armies. We want you to bring your old armies. We're going to play all this type of stuff, and then leave out core factions. I don't think that they're going to do stuff like Albion and Dogs of War, if you consider Dogs of War a faction.
Playing to the crowd here.
But I don't know that they would say, we're bringing back the, you know, Warhammer Fantasy, we're bringing back the old world, we're going to have this big release, make people wait 5 years, and then whenever it comes around, they're like, well, you could play these four factions, you know? I don't know that they would do that. So I think one of the bulk of their time is spent getting, you know, the majority of the factions. I'm going to guess that there's like 10, 11, 12 factions released. And who knows? They may even go full force with the Kislev release, since they've been, you know, working with Creative Assembly a little bit. But maybe that'll come later on down the road, since Kislev and Cathay feel like expansion.
I'm going to take the over as well for two reasons. Number one, I've been drinking some margaritas. So that's going to be the first reason that I'll take the over. The other is, you know, the old world is going to be all about embracing the past. So they're going to reject everything after Ravening Hordes, and they're going to drop a Ravening Hordes style book that just, you know, allows you to play all the factions. And I'm calling it now. We're going to have 15 or 16 factions on start in this Ravening Hordes style
book. Oh, daddy.
So now you know how many margaritas I have drunk based on that prognostication. That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
One for each army.
Going to go that way. All right. So your next, the over-under, and you can explain briefly or not, whatever, the number of weeks between release of the old world and an FAQ for the old world. The number of weeks, 12 and a half. So how fast will they have to put out an FAQ, in other words? As
how fast
Carrie
do it for the Leagues of
Votan? Before they drop the book.
Under. 12 and a half weeks?
100% under.
Yes.
Under.
Okay. You have no faith in GW's ability to make this game, do you?
No. I think there's going to be a hefty FAQ, but I think they're going to try and push it out as fast as possible. It's not that it won't need an FAQ for 12 weeks. It's that they're going to realize in the first couple weeks that they need to have one. So I'm guessing a month, 6 weeks, something like that.
Yeah, you know what? I think I agree. I'm going to go with the under on that one as well. I think it's not going to be super quick. I don't think it's going to be under a month, but I think it's going to be around the 2 month mark that they're going to drop the FAQ.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with traditional FAQ releases in the past and timing and all that. I'll go over. You know, honestly, I don't have really much expectations or really know what the old world's going to look like or anything like that. So I'll take the over.
Mike, I'll just say, giving an uninformed opinion is your right as an American. It's basically a tradition. So it's okay that you don't really know what's going to be there because we can all have our opinions.
Starting in. Definitely under. I think we'll be seeing an FAQ probably within the first 2 weeks. I'm going to see a lot of players from AOS and 40K. Oh, this is the new thing. We'll give it a try. And there's going to be an awful lot of teething issues straight out of the door. How does this work? This uses similar terminology to what I'm used to, but it means something different. And I think there's going to be an immediate need for, just from the first release with, you know, be a sort of limited edition, bundle, pre-order, jobby, like they've done with League of Votan. And we're going to see, okay, we actually need to FAQ some things straight out the door because this is going to blow up in our faces otherwise. Something's either going to run away with the balance or this is just going to be really frustrating if we don't clarify it.
It was sounding like you were saying it was going to be an FAQ because the players were figuring stuff out. But you finally mentioned that GW also struggles with balance. So now it's sounding like an actual GW podcast where someone's mentioning GW's inability to do anything correctly.
Yeah, I think that given this is more or less going to be an entirely new game, they've talked about a blend of 7th edition, 6th edition, 8th edition influences. There's going to be so many players going in with a set way in their mind of how this should be that it's going to unbalance itself unless they get the wording on everything perfect, which is just never going to happen.
Who's ready for the return of Magic cards?
Goodness, Evan's going to die when they start putting in tactical cards.
Oh, God, don't
all this
start
stuff
me with cards. My least favorite thing in war games.
I don't know why they haven't gone that route with stratagems, to be honest. It'd make more sense than people digging around in the book.
I'm certain they will, and I do know that Evan's going to hate that.
Ugh. Not a fan.
I would not be surprised if they introduce some Age of Sigmar elements as well, like war scrolls and battalions and stuff like that.
I'm looking at Horus Heresy typically as what I'm seeing as the likely route. But anyway, so I think that may be what we see some.
Heresy is very different because they took what was then the current system and ported it sideways, whereas this is going to be make sort of doing a backwards blend of several different versions depending on the nostalgia of the writers.
Gotcha. Well, hopefully it's not Matt Ward and elves won't be OP in every way. So I guess two questions. We'll try to do them at once. The over under on the price of the starter set at $240. And the over-under on the number of months before we see it drop at 21 months. What do you have for me?
Well, I wonder how the price of the euro affects it.
Yeah, so my answer is definitely under on the cost, but that's because I'm, you know, 40 miles from Nottingham, so it will be cheaper for me than that. No import costs, none of those overheads or those fixed international prices that ignore deflate the current price of the pound or anything like that.
Yeah, isn't Warhammer really expensive in the upside down?
Yeah.
Man, GW has a vendetta against them, it seems like.
All right, so what about the rest of you? $240 for the price of the starter and $21 for months of release.
I'm going to say under for the price of the starter. I think they're going to want to hit a 180 to 200 price point. Just because, you know, the army sizes have to be bigger in Warhammer Fantasy than they could be for, you know, their Age of Sigmar boxes that have been coming out. But at the same time, they don't want it to be much more than Horus Heresy, I think. And then for the 21 months for release, I think it's going to be over. I think that we'll be lucky to get a map next year, and then eventually we'll get a roadmap where we can expect maps to come out on a schedule, and then finally we'll get
a map.
It's a roadmap of maps, yes.
Given GW's appreciation for timing and free advertising, I think we won't see a release until Warhammer Total War 3 is over, and there is no community existing left for them to steal from. Also, I'm pretty sure they will re-release Island of Blood for the third time, just as an additional starter set, because we've already seen it for 8th, we've seen it for Age of Sigma. They clearly like those frames, even if they don't want to sell them to us at the moment.
Would anyone complain about that?
No,
I wouldn't, especially if they also did a Battlefield Skull Pass. I would totally pick up another one of those.
Mike, Evan, what about y'all?
Over.
All right.
Great, man. 50 and 2.5 years.
Okay.
I'll take the under on the price, and I'll take the over on the months. 21 months is a year and 3/4, if that my math is right. And I don't think it's going to come out within the next 2 years.
So, Mike, I have to ask you the question. Is never coming out above 21 months, I mean, does that count as the over? Is that your take?
I don't know if I would go so far as to say it's never coming out, but we're sitting here at 3 years almost. We're sitting here recording in October of 2022. It was announced in November of 2019. And, we're about 3 years in, and really all we have is like 1/5 of the piece of a map of Cathay, and like there's just absolutely no reason to have any type of bullish prediction on timing for anything involved in this. So yeah, it's gonna be a while, I think.
It's amazing because Mike has hot takes on every other topic we ever bring up, and then when it comes to the old world, this is like the most lukewarm takes you'll ever hear.
Well, if Mike says don't be bullish, I shall be bullish. So I'm gonna go with the under. I think if they don't release the old world in the next 2 years, then the window of when they release it, according to their own release dates of 40K and AOS, they get back in a loop where they don't want to drop it the same summer that they do a new edition of 40K or AOS. So I think they have to get it in by 2024 to avoid that to any significant degree. So I think they'll do the under on that. Price, I'll be hopeful and take the under, because I think they'll want to get people in initially, and then they'll bump it after a short amount of time.
I don't know that starter boxes have ever been that expensive. I don't really remember the price of all the different starter sets, but I don't remember them being prohibitively expensive.
Even their current starter boxes are always really good deals too. Like, you want to pick up these starter boxes because you end up getting all the models that you would have, at 70% of the price point if you bought them individually.
All right. Well, I think we had varying ideas on the release. So we now get to have another game. This one will be hosted by Brian. So Brian, what do you have for us?
My game is called a print limit or squat. So by print, I don't mean 3D print. I mean, would you be in favor of GW printing or going forward with the subject? And then limit, should they, release it, but limit it, make it really special, make it small. It's really annoying, so we'll just have a few of them. Or squat, GW should get rid of it, never consider it, leave it alone, put it in the farthest reaches of all hot takes. So the first thing I have is kind of a softball. We'll start with Dogs of War as a faction. Should they print it? Should they do a limited release? Or should Dogs of War just go away forever?
Squat.
Yeah, I guess I'll take a stab at it. What I think is going to happen with the old world is I think something approximating Dogs of War is going to happen. I think it's going to be the Border Princes or some other human realm, and I think they're going to print it.
I'm going to change mine from squat to limit, and it's not. I think if they're going to do anything with Dogs of War, they're just going to be regiments of renown. I don't think they're ever going to get a proper like army book, and they'd probably release them the same way they do like Underworld's warbands, where like it's used for something else, but you can also, hey, you can run them in your old world game as this mercenary group or whatever.
When they first announced the old world, I would have said that Dogs of War would certainly be in it because they announced that it's kind of an empire centric. And I think this human oriented thing would have worked and they would have done that. But with them focusing on a number of others and showing, you know, high elves are going to be in it, wood elves or whatever, through the maps that they've released, I think they will print it. However, if it were up to me, I would squat Dogs of War because there's no need for all this ridiculous nonsense where you can add stuff to these things and it's these guys from 800 different locations joining together to fight a battle against Greenskin. It's just ridiculous. And honestly, anyone who plays Dogs of War is in a flannel shirt, has a handlebar mustache, and is drinking the most obscure local IPA that they can find.
I'm going to stand up for Ravenclaws and all of our other Discord members who play Dogs of War and really, you know, have put a lot of time, effort, and love into collecting and hobbying and playing Dogs of War. And I think Dogs of War are a wonderful addition to the Warhammer Fantasy Battles universe, and I look forward to seeing more of them in the future.
Basis that if we go with Ryan's idea of a Ravening Hordes book with a load of lists in, and that's a big if, then a logical extra list they can put in is where they cherry pick from a number of different factions, a few, you know, human units. Oh, here's a dwarf unit. Here's an elf unit in rare, and they could very easily push that Ravening Hordes up an extra list by having what is a bare bones Dogs of War list that also could act as a very easy, well, if you don't want to choose, you can get a box of everything and chuck them together on the table, and there's your army.
Well, Kerry, now you've made me regret my whole Ravening Hordes thing, because it's going to bring us Dogs of War. And if that's the case, I want to recant of supporting Ravening Hordes. I want to get rid of Dogs.
Pick a faction, people. Come on.
Okay. Second question for the print, limit, or squat. It actually pertains to Warhammer 8th edition. So these have a special place in my heart for whenever I saw them. However, I know they're not everybody's most favorite unit to see on the board. So in 8th edition currently, would you have GW continue to print, limit, or squat Skaven Storm Fiends?
Squat, moving on.
Get that crap out of here. Get that crap out of here.
Yeah, I mean, if you've played Warhammer 8th edition with Storm Fiends, I mean, the only reasonable answer, unless you're actually taking Storm Fiends yourselves, is to say that they are stupid and that they should be removed from the game.
If you're taking Storm Fiends now, I honestly don't know how you still have people playing against you. Because the person who's taking Storm Fiends at this point, after however many years since fantasy was gone, how are you doing that? Who's playing you?
Right, because all games are recreational now. It's not like you show up to a grand tournament and someone's forced to play you and your Storm Fiends. I mean, now it's just you and your buddies, and you know, I don't let Ryan play Wood Elves, and I'm not going to let anyone else play Storm Fiends.
Let me. I'm my own man, Mike. I can play Wood Elves if I want to play Wood Elves, and then you can leave as you want to leave before playing me.
Yeah, they're just brutal. You gotta get rid of them.
Hopefully they'll get some new rules because the models look cool. But they're gonna have to be revamp or something, but not
RTS. I mean, yeah. Well, I guess the way you're wording the question is, if they are printing new rules for it, you could make cool Storm Fiends. I mean, the models are great. So, yeah, I guess on that way you could say print. But in my heart, it's squat.
I'd go with print. One thing that I have come across is that while they might actually use them as a unit is incredibly unbalanced, using individual models of them as weapon teams is a lot cheaper and more visually appealing than using the old resin warp fire throwers that are still available.
Oh, I like that. I like that. So print them, but they're not really Storm Fiends. They're other things.
Yeah, this is just a glorified weapon team that looks nice and has some strange interactions with scenery where it can be shot over top of a low wall.
Okay, I like that. I can buy that. Yeah. For the next question, for print, limit, and squat, I have the Age of Sigmar-esque centerpiece models, the gigantic models. Would you print, limit, or squat them as they pertain to adding them to Warhammer Fantasy, or in the old world, or in 8th edition? Now, I do understand that some of the Age of Sigmar models, like Manfred and Arkin and Nagash, had rules with their larger bases for the end times. But would you like to see that spread out to all factions?
I'm going to go with get rid of the centerpieces. I love modeling. I think it's enjoyable, but it just doesn't fit in a Warhammer war game to have whatever temple terrain that some bone dude is sitting on floating about the battlefield with him and like landing. And he's got this pillars and staircases and whatnot. And he's showing up here, and then he's showing up there. It looks like terrain is moving around the battlefield. I personally, it takes me out of it to see terrain floating around the battlefield with these big centerpiece models. If there's no terrain and it's a huge model, that's awesome. I'm okay with it. Floating skulls, all that stuff, but not the terrain.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, you wouldn't want to see a big centerpiece of like Conan the Barbarian sitting atop his throne with his furrowed brow, right? Right. You want to just see the model.
Yeah, and so for that reason, yeah, I would definitely squat those types of releases.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I'm a little bit of the opinion that they need to be game pieces first before like display models. Because, you know, if you're trying to build a community of people playing a war game, you want them to be able to be portable and moved. And they've gotten to the point where some of these are just so fragile and hard to move. It's not, they're kind of limiting who they can market these to, I think.
Limited release, AOS, it definitely feels like models that could be done in a much more practical way are now becoming mini dioramas. But things like Nagash, where, you know, this is something or someone of a global significance and godlike power level, yeah, okay, put them on a 150 by 200. That, you know, if that's coming out, this should signify that this is, you know, we're heading into a sort of 3,000, 4,000 point game. That kind of centerpiece as an individual giant monster character, fair enough. But there's a very limited number of those within the lore. So Nagash, Ariel for the Wood Elves, maybe she'd be a decent candidate for something big and centerpiecey. But the idea of every, you know, can you imagine a Dogs of War centerpiece model, just to go with a previous example, where it's some guy they've just made up and they've had to put a massive griffin or eight ogres next to him to make the centerpiece.
Right.
Yeah, I've just had to make you all think about Dogs of War faction again.
Just as a side note, did everyone see that Orion piece that was at the Golden Demon?
Oh, that was awesome.
Magnus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that was really cool.
Like that. obviously that person, you know, it was converted from a 40K model or whatever, but you know, that would fit, I would think that would fit in, you know, what they would be doing for the old world. It's just like a kind of upscaled version of the old Orion model, and it looks impressive, but it's just a guy standing there when it comes down to it, you know. He's not like riding on some giant beetle.
But see, to me, the monster ones and like the Nagash and all those, I'm fine with. To me, it's all about terrain. If it's an immovable object, don't have it with a model. Same thing for the tactical rock. I don't want that. I don't want Skaven standing on statues. So for me, it's not even about the how big the model is. It's just I don't want terrain moving around in the middle of my unit.
What are your, just real quick, what is your opinion on Teclis T-posing over the battlefield?
Okay, well, that's just an ugly model. I mean, to me, it's not that it's a centerpiece model, it's just that it was poorly done.
I'm fine with the T-pose. It's the puffy directing pants that put me off.
The parachute pants?
Yeah. But the other thing, he's probably the worst example of here is an infantry size model and the monster is sort of there. They're buddies.
Right.
They're on the same base because we need it to be a centerpiece, as opposed to the model, the monster is related. Is the monster related to him? Is the monster, I'm sure if I read the lore, it would explain why the monster has to be 5 feet behind him at all times as some kind of glorified bodyguard / sunshade.
All right, well, let's do one more, Brian. Do you have one more for us?
Yeah, I've got one more. Well, I don't know if it depends on how much of a painting purist you are, I suppose. But contrast paints, should GW keep pushing them? Should they go back to just limiting them like shades? Or should they just get rid of them altogether?
Oh, keep working on them. Keep printing them. I haven't used any of the new ones, but you hear more talk about paints and paint ranges and stuff now than you ever did. And I think that's part of that comes from contrast opening up the hobby to a bunch of people. So yeah, keep going on that.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm going to say absolutely. Keep it going, print it. Whether you're a beginning painter and it's someone who's like, I'm going to use contrast paints and that's all I'm going to use, right? And they're just getting something tabletop ready and it allows them to feel like they can get an army out there, that's awesome. Do it. If it's someone who's a more technical painter or more experienced painter and they want to use contrast paints and then, you know, do the more traditional highlights and washes after it, I think it looks great. On my new Skaven, I've certainly used some contrast paints to start off and then highlight up from there. And I think they're awesome and they can add a lot of depth. So I am all for them for any level of painter.
Print. I'm never going to use them myself, but then again, I never use washes either. So that's not really a surprise. But again, people coming in, if they want to use them, if it gets models on the table that are print that are painted, if it makes painting more enjoyable to people, or at least more rewarding, then yeah, I see no issue with it. Doesn't mean I have to use them myself, but it means I can recognize that they're a good thing for the hobby to have.
Yeah, I feel like this was just a trap question set up for me, but I don't use contrasts. I know very, very good painters who use contrasts to a limited extent, and I don't suspect I'll use contrasts, but I might moving forward. I guess my philosophy around painting as I get older is more inclusive, and you know, it's, even though something might not appeal to me, like, or even if I don't find something impressive, I'll still support and upvote it just because it means something to somebody else, right? And so it doesn't really matter what I think. And so if other people are happy with it, that's...
People can grow, everyone. People can
One thing grow. I do want to mention real quick is, have you guys heard of this this new painting technique that's been... I don't even know if it's new, but it's been specifically marketed as something that makes you prefer contrasts over traditional paints. They call it slap chop or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you do a base color in the dark gray, and then you do a zenithal in a lighter gray, and then you dry brush your white highlights all over it, and then you're supposed to be able to just slap on your contrast after that, and you get, you know, start to finish shades to highlights just from a single application or something like that. And people are pumping out models in like 20 minutes or something like that. It seems to be really popular. My local shop is putting on some sort of like Warhammer Day painting demonstration. And the topic is slap chop painting tomorrow. That if I can find some time, I might stop by to see what exactly they're doing.
Yeah, I saw a video about that recently, and I was kind of confused because I was like, were people not already doing this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was like, I thought this was kind of a common thing already, but I guess maybe I'm way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I mean, I had always seen it done or called like underpainting or something like that, but right, they put a fancy name on it and they market it with GW's new contrast, and it sure gets those YouTube views.
Well, and then I saw someone do this I can't remember which channel, I think it was Ninjan. I saw he was kind of exploring this idea and then pushed it up, you know, he did another 20 minutes after doing 20 minutes of that slap chop method or whatever of just edge highlighting after that, and it kicked it up even another notch. But I'm like, but at that point you're just edge highlighting, so like it's not really saving you any more time than if you just did it normally. But yeah, no, interesting idea. I think any way that people can pump out armies in a good amount of time is okay by me.
Getting people to play is the key thing. Allowing people to choose like what matters most to them. Like if someone doesn't want to use them and take their time getting out each model individually, I don't know, randomly two models a night, you know, two Bestigors or two Executioners or Witch Elves a night, they can do that. But if someone else really values the gameplay but also wants to have painted models, then they can do that.
You know, I think I was I wasn't annoyed, but I was just like, I didn't see the value of this slap chop method after I just painted like 16 Bretonian Knights where there's no way that you could do that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, this has no appeal to me at this moment.
Anything with like a pattern or anything like that, it's almost, I don't know how well it'll work. But then again, some of them were doing Space Marines, and then they'd slap chop the Space Marine together and then throw on the shoulder insignias afterwards.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it could come together pretty quick.
All right, well, at this point, we're going to move to another game. We have a time to check our knowledge. We'll do a few questions, but we'll check our knowledge with 20 questions hosted by Carrie.
Okay, so I've got questions of different difficulty. So if anyone's not played 20 questions before, the idea is that I'll be thinking of a particular individual, in this case from the Warhammer world, and you as a team are allowed up to 20 questions, which will be given a yes no answer, and from this you must try and determine who I'm thinking of. Now, in terms of difficulty, we're going to start off with easy ones, which means they had 8th edition models and 8th edition army book rules. So your pool of options is sort of under 100 here. So this is much easier than actual 20 questions where it could be any celebrity or any famous person in the entire world. So
is it Loki or Fellhart?
It is not. No.
He's just going to start naming characters.
Oh gosh, Mike is going to break the game by asking if it's this person every time. We're only going to actually have 15 questions because Mike's going to ask a person.
Ooh, I got one.
Shall we just go in order? Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Is this person an elf?
No.
Yes. I mean,
yes.
Okay. Is this person destruction?
No.
Does this person ride a mount?
Yes.
Is it Carl Franz?
No.
Is this person Chaos?
No.
Is anyone keeping track of how many questions we've had?
Yes, I am.
It's in the chat. Okay.
Is this person male?
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
That might mean it's a demon. It might be
or a forest spirit or some shit.
If going off personal pronouns used in the lore, yes.
Okay.
Does this person cast magic?
Yes.
Is this person undead?
Oh. Highly debatable. I would say yes.
Oh, gosh.
Does this person have a novel about them?
No.
So they're not chaos. They're not destruction. So that means they have to be good, right? Oh, I'll bet it's a lizardman because they would. Oh, no, but they're undead, maybe.
Is it Durthu?
No.
He's not mounted.
Oh, rides a mount. Yeah, okay.
This isn't one of the guesses, but would you consider Lord Croak mounted?
I would, coincidentally. Completely coincidentally, I would.
He was who I was thinking, and I actually discarded him because I was like, oh, he's not mounted. But he is mounted on a palanquin.
Well, okay, so that kind of narrows it down based on the undead maybe.
I would like to guess Lord Croak.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm going to claim it, even though it's definitely Brian who got it. I'm still going to claim that I got that.
How many questions did we take?
Far too many.
Well, I'm not counting Carl Fromm.
10.
Let's go to the next one. What do we have next?
I guess we have to start with the questions, right?
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Are you ready for number 2, Carrie?
Yes.
Is this character order?
Yes.
Is this character mounted?
He can be.
I'll just ask.
Yes, he can be.
Oh, that's not an answer.
Is it Carl Franz? No. That's not yes.
Not one of our questions.
Is this a wizard?
No.
They're for the forces of order. They may or may not be mounted. They aren't a wizard.
Are they an elf?
No.
Yes.
Every time.
Is it a dwarf?
No.
That's a good guess. It could have been mounted on a shield. Good.
Yeah, I was thinking about someone mounted on like a
pillar. Is it a human?
Yes.
Okay. Now we're not getting somewhere.
Are they Bretonian?
No.
Okay, so necromancers are human and so are Empire. Anything else that's human? Oh, but they're order.
But they don't cast magic.
And they don't cast magic. So never mind about the necromancer thing, guys. I didn't say that. I'm going to cut it out. No one will never know that I said that. Goodness gracious. Can Luther Huss be on foot?
No. He was mounted.
Are they?
Is Luther Huss a guess?
No. I was asking the group, not you.
These are characters. This isn't a question for a question, but are these supposed to be characters that are found on the tabletop?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to ask it just to make sure. Were they in Empire army book?
Oh man, we're so close.
This is sad. I should know the Empire army book.
But we know it's not a wizard, and we. Well, I guess it's.
So that's Ludwig?
No, this has to be. Well, I think it's the Archlector. I think it's Theogrim.
The Grim.
Volkmar?
Oh, Volkmar or.
Yeah.
Well, Valton had a mounted and a regular model.
Well, since you said it goes back to 5th edition, I think the Archlector dude could be taken.
Yes.
Yeah, and Valton wasn't around in 5th, was he? Because he came in at 6th.
Yeah, I don't think so. He only came around in Storm of Chaos.
Okay, so let's go with Volkmar.
Yes. Yep, it's Volkmar. Yep, completely right on that. Volkmar
nice.
The Grim.
Hey, good pretty job. Good.
even though Mike came up with that one, I'm also going to take credit for it as well.
Since you said the last thing.
All right, hit us with your hard one.
I guess we have to ask questions again.
I think we're cheating by brainstorming this to death, but all right.
Are we doing that one right now?
8th edition model, 8th edition rules.
Okay.
That's so much easier than it could be. I mean, Warhammer Universe is so freaking big.
I'm feeling confident. Is it Kalida?
Damn it, Ryan.
No.
Wait, I was wrong? Come on. That was a good guess.
Is this character chaos aligned?
Yes.
Is this person a demon?
No.
This person's Skaven.
No.
So it's either chaos. Well, they didn't get really, or chaos dwarves, but they didn't get an army book, so I'm suspecting it.
Could be beastmen. Nobody suspects beastmen.
Does this person have hooves?
Yes.
Mm.
So, damn it, Ryan. Why don't you just ask if they're beastmen, Ryan?
Because hooves was a more fun question.
Is this character a wizard?
No.
Does this character have four hooves?
No.
Is this character in Total War Warhammer?
Yes.
All right. I don't like that question. We can't go outside the tabletop game. Right? Not all of us play that.
I don't play video games. Everyone does that. Well, is this person found in Army Books Beastmen?
Yes.
Is it Slugtongue?
No, and Slugtongue didn't have a model in 8th, so he wouldn't fit this criteria.
No, it didn't. That's a stupid question.
Oh, Mike. You thought I wasted one with Kalida. That was a waste.
Is it?
Kalida was a good guess.
Who are the non-mounted beasts?
I know who it is, but it's because of the Total War question. It's pretty cheaty. It's a...
You ruined the whole podcast, Brian.
Is it Carl Franz? Is it
Oh man, that could have been our 20th question. You could really screwed us over.
Is it Kezrick One Eye?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's the other one.
I'm not gonna go look at my beastman book, but
I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
The only other one I can remember is
it's the one that
spellcaster.
It's the one that turns people into spawn. What's his name? Morgur. Yeah, is it Morgur?
Yeah, it's Morgur. Morgur the Shadowgrave.
But he's a spellcaster.
No, he's not.
Oh,
no,
he's not?
Just disgusting.
Not actually a wizard. He has some abilities that look magical, act magical, but they aren't spells. They're just things he does.
Is it Morgor? Do I get credit for this one? Can I not take credit from this from Evan? I want to take credit for everyone else's guesses.
No, it was Brian. He said it first.
Slugtongue
is low key pretty awesome.
Yeah, everyone loves Slugtongue.
Actually, a decent choice in Beastman, in my opinion.
All right, what's our next 20 questions?
Oh, let's do the very hard. Let's just go for it.
Wait, what's the definition of the very hard?
A hard question. This means that the character was not in any of the 8th edition books, either army books or campaign supplements, and did not have a model current in 8th either. So if you're playing this back in 2015, just before End Times, you would not be able to walk into Games Workshop and buy a model or buy a book that had this character's rules in.
Wait, so it has a model, but it's a character in the Warhammer Fantasy universe, but it doesn't have rules in 8th or a model in 8th. But it has a model in a previous edition.
Yes, these could be on the tabletop, but either it would be a retro model just standing in for someone, relatively generic. So if it was an old Chaos character, this is my Chaos Warlord. I've had to buy him through the normal list. Or there were, for instance, Armies Project rules for most of the characters floating around before End Times as well, and certainly are now.
Okay.
Is it a Wood Elf?
No.
It's Bertrand the Brigand.
No, it's not Bertrand the Brigand. I did almost use him. He is on my list of options a couple of places down for a hard one, but no, it's not Bertrand.
Oh, there you go.
Is it an elf?
No.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Are they from the old world?
Yes.
Are they chaos aligned?
Yes.
This has a model in previous editions.
Old World.
Does Akold have?
No,
I guess I'm kind of jumping the gun.
No, he doesn't have rules or a model. He has an old model.
My lore is absolutely the worst.
Is it Akold?
Yeah, it's Akold Hellbrass.
Hey, nice.
Uh-huh. I got it. It was all me. I did it all by myself. Nobody helped me.
Nobody helped me. None of you helped me.
Our very difficult one was the one we got the easiest.
Interesting character. Not a hugely popular one or particularly well known, but his model is beautiful. Scale mail, big sword, rather silly little icon on his back, but as you said, Whiskey painted him quite recently, actually, and did a beautiful job. Anyone that's not seen that on the Discord, I would strongly recommend just do a search for Akold Hellbrass and see if it comes up, because it is gorgeous.
We'll do one more difficult one, and then we'll play our last game and go.
It has a model in our previous edition.
Yes.
Is it a green skin?
Yes.
Oh!
Yes!
Oh,
there we go. Is it mounted?
No.
Is it too small to care about?
Oh, I like that.
I.e. a goblin.
No.
Mm. Is it Borgut Face Beater?
No.
That's the one I know.
considering that's the only green skin I know that wasn't innate.
Is it
8th edition?
Gorfang Rotgut? I don't think he has rules for 8th.
Yep, that's Gorfang Rotgut. So,
oh, nice. Yes.
Ooh, nice.
I don't know who the hell's Gorfang Rotgut.
I don't know who that is.
He was the original orc war boss who used goblins and used bits of night, you know, used goblins, night goblins, trolls, giants, orcs. His thing was the idea that you could do a unified list of everything available for the faction.
Hmm.
That's disappointing. A mishmash? I don't like goblins. No goblins in the army. That's weak. Weak sauce.
Later on, that became standard, so his gimmick was completely outmoded and just didn't fit at all anymore. So one of the reasons he fell out of being in army books and things, in my opinion, anyway.
I want to say, wasn't Gorfang Rotgut like really cunning or something like that? Like, he was weak for a boss, but he was cunning, so he ascended to boss or something like that.
Cunning, yeah. But brutal.
Yeah, so Gorfang, interesting fella. Absolutely tiny original model. Got a good send-off in the Thorgrim novel, if anyone's read that. So you have Gorfang attacking Karakate Peaks. Thorgrim turns up. I'm pretty sure it's meant to be just after he was at Nagashizar. And you have Gorfang get shot with a bolt thrower and just has a bolt thrower bolt sticking through him and is chasing Belagar Ironhammer's pregnant wife around the battlefield.
I love green skins.
That's great. Good quality stuff.
Quality.
If you get a chance, read that one. It's really quite a fun book if you're into dwarves or if you're into greenskins. Obviously, character shields are up, so no one who had a model could possibly die. It does not end well for Gorfang.
Thanks for putting that together.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. Our last game is going to be Would You Rather. Would you rather be invited to dinner by Grisus Goldtooth or Manfred von Karstein?
I would definitely prefer to be invited to dinner with Manfred over Grisus Goldtooth.
Why Manfred?
Just based entirely on the book about... Based entirely on the short story about the meal where Grisus became tyrant. So yeah, that's my reasoning.
Oh no. Tell us more.
I feel like either way you go, you're going to be dinner for one of them, right?
I cannot off the top of my head remember the name of the short story, but it is Grisius Goldtooth, his brother and his father, and the father has announced that the next tyrant will be decided by an eating contest. And they have been eating for multiple days, and they've had it, the things that have been brought in have become increasingly more putrid. So we've had brains, that we've had spoiled meat just heaped in front of them, and it's all getting shoveled up. And then we get to the point where the butcher says, there is no more. There is no more. We're out of meat. And Grecius beats his father to death and has the butcher serve the father to the pair of them. And the brother eventually cracks, and just all of it comes back up all over this sort of huge stone table, all over the father's remains. And then Grecius eats that too.
Oh no.
The last little morsel, which I think actually might be the name of the story. Grecius is fishing the morsel out of his brother's vomit to eat. So yeah, don't want to go near a dinner party at Grecius's. Just straightforward. Manfred, yeah, he might be inviting me for some sort of duplicitous reason, or just to eat me, but at least it ain't going to be that bad.
Nice.
Ogre.
So you're saying he invites you to dinner, has an eating contest with you. Once you start engorging yourself, that's when he eats you. Manfred, just bite me and get it over with.
Well, even with Manfred, if he's planning on betraying somebody, maybe you're not the one that he's going to be a scumbag Manfred towards.
That's a good point. He could just mess it up.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
the plan is to eat you, but he just messes it up at the you know, pinnacle moment just to be Manfred.
All right. Well, this next one is, would you rather play against MSU Wood Elves or Castle Dwarves?
Castle Dwarves. Yeah. Why? It requires less brain power. You know what I mean? Because like with Wood Elves, you have to consider all their potential moves and where they're moving next, and you're just chasing shadows the whole time. Whereas like Castle Dwarves, you know what you're getting.
It's just up to the dice.
Right.
So I would definitely rather play Castle Dwarves, because the game is going to be shorter. Against MSU Wood Elves, you're going to be spending a lot of time with micromanaging movement.
Oh, that's a good point, because your movement phase doesn't take forever.
And you're still not going to be having fun. At least with Castle Dwarves, they ain't going to do anything in the movement phase. Ain't going to do anything in the magic phase.
No magic, yeah.
Barely going to do anything in the combat phase unless you've got their turn that you're going to have to suffer through is pretty brief. So let's assume that there's actually something else that you could be doing with your time that isn't quite as unpleasant. You're going to get to that sooner. Or if you're in a context where you can ask for a rematch with different armies, different lists, you're going to get to that sooner. Obviously, if this is your only game of the month or only game of the fortnight, you might be thinking, well, yeah, but I want to try and eke out some enjoyment of this. You're playing Castle Dwarves or MSU Wood Elves. Unless you've come with a grand strategy of how you're going to beat that, you ain't going to have fun. It's unfortunate, but it's very true.
Okay. Anyone disagree? Anyone?
Yeah, I mean, I think to complicate the entire thing, I mean, it's going to be predicated on what I'm playing with.
Yeah, right? But, fair.
The MSU Wood Elves has like three hard counters, and that's about it. Most everyone else is gonna have a really bad time. So I'd rather play the dwarves, even though that's also
what are those three hard counters?
You have a few different builds in the game, I'd say. I think Demons of Chaos have a decent ability to build an army that is quick enough and resilient enough to get to those units.
Yep, I definitely played a Slaanesh. A Demons of Slaanesh army that could make it difficult.
And then you have the Warriors of Chaos build, which is going to be what's known as kind of the Flying Circus, which it's going to take all the options that are flying or as fast moving as possible and well armored, and they can actually get to the Wood Elves and do movement even better than them. Those are the two that come off the top of my head.
I would say I would much rather watch, like if I was watching two of my friends play, I would much rather watch an MSU Wood Elves game than watch a Dwarves game.
But I don't want to watch it. I don't want to watch either.
Would you feel bad for the person facing the MSU Wood Elves while you were watching? Would you like?
Yeah, I would definitely commiserate with them, sure. But I think from like, you know, because the most interesting part of the game is the movement phase, and that's what they do.
All right. Have any of you ever played as MSU Wood Elves, or am I the only jerk in the group that
ever played as them?
I played Wood Elves, but I was a child, and I don't know what that means. So.
We should note for the listeners that MSU is multiple small units. It's when you basically give your opponent no targets worthwhile, and everything is extremely maneuverable and just is not going to get touched. You know, everything's below 140, 180 points. So, all right, well, let's go. We'll move on to our next one. Would you rather paint an entire army with yellow as the main color, or an entire army with white as the main color?
I just did a lot of yellow.
I'll say yellow because, yeah, I've also painted that whole Mousseon army's black and yellow, so got quite good at painting yellow.
I thought about that when I did this question.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely yellow. I mean, I think it's just easier. It's an easier color to paint by every kind of standard.
Yeah, I think you can get a lot more shades out of the yellow than you can with the white. I don't know a shade progression that looks as impressive as yellow with white.
So yellow or white? Well, actually, really tricky one for me because my current army is a Southlands army based on sort of medieval, early modern Ethiopia. And they all wear white.
Oh, boy.
They nearly all wear white. It's the some white flowing robes all over the place. That is the color scheme of those guys. And this is, I'd like to paint some yellow. Yellow sounds good. Bit of variety.
Yeah, I painted on my Warriors of Chaos, and they have a significant amount of white, and it's not always fun.
It's the most challenging color to use the most skillfully, I think, probably, that you see commonly in Warhammer. It's just really hard.
Yeah.
Good question.
All right. Here's the next one. Would you rather do an army that is entirely in fine cast, or the army you had to paint it but without any primer?
Oh, my God. What psychopath came up with this question?
No primer. I hate fine cast. I just did a fine cast Najal Stormcaller for a friend, and it was so brittle. There were so many breakpoints. There were so many extra things that you had to clip, and the sculpt was even messed up on the staff, so I couldn't do cool stuff on the staff. I would much rather, you know, spray on a base paint with airbrush than have to deal with a whole army of fine cast.
I feel like you're cheating. Isn't that prime?
I agree. I think that's cheating. No,
is that cheating?
No, you just have to paint.
Interesting.
Directly onto the plastic with your coat.
But it is plastic and not metal, right? Because I think metal without primer would be even more, you know, hair pulling.
Either one. You could do it hot tub mic style. And do all metal, or you could do some plastic as well, like a normal human being.
Plastic's bad for the environment, dog. Metal's good.
Hey, I save all my sprues and recycle them into, I don't know. I have them in boxes for some reason. I don't know what I'm going to do with them.
I do too.
I'll go fine casts over the, because my biggest like hang up when I'm doing hobbying is fighting the paint. And it just annoys me so much when I'm like doing more worrying about mixing paints and making sure it's the right consistency and all that sort of stuff. Like worrying about the material. Like I hate fighting against the paint. Like I'd rather it just go on the way it's supposed to, you know? And if you don't have primer, it's not going to go on the way it's supposed to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that our host is asking bad questions, but the obvious answer here is fine cast with primer, even though fine cast has a million problems and I hate fine cast. You can't paint a metal army or even a plastic army to any standard at all without some sort of priming agent. I mean, I don't even think paint sticks to any of these metal models without some sort of, you know, primer. So what are you going
to
do?
I would have to say when I first started doing models, I had no idea about any of this. And I definitely tried to paint straight onto the plastic with the Citadel paints and did that way. So I have experience with that. And man, you got to have primer. And I don't hate fine cast nearly as much as many people do, but I do think Ryan's onto something. It is annoying to have to get rid of all that stuff on there. It's pretty bothersome.
Well, and I think the common complaint with fine cast is the models that were not designed for fine cast, reproductions of metal models in fine cast, have the most problems. Yeah. Just because of the way those molds were not set up for that type of material. And there's definitely some 8th edition sculpts that were designed for fine cast that still hold up just fine.
See, that's true too. Yeah.
Primer versus fine cast. Thing is, I hand prime everything. So it's about how do we define primer in general? It would not be a difficulty for me to not use spray primer or not use airbrush primer because I just don't use it anyway. So I would if I'm still allowed to go through everything just with a brush and a pot of a bad and black, then yeah, I would take the no primer option because it affects me in no possible way. If we're talking just colours onto bare plastic, then I'd be it's a lot trickier. I'd probably take the all fine cast army.
Kerry likes to hobby like he's in the 1940s. It sounds like
by candlelight.
Yeah, he won't use contrasts. He only uses the Citadel paints, and he only primes by hand. I was like, was that like before spray primer? I guess that's what people did. I have no idea.
He's out in his backyard crushing berries to make this paint.
Okay. I hand prime because I did try using spray primes years ago, back when I was like 12, 13, 14. Firstly, they're expensive. Secondly, you just find, you go to then paint things and you just find bits that the primer's missed. And you end up having to hand prime sections of it anyway. And it just seemed, I'm paying the extra for the spray, but then having to do this job manually anyway, I might as well just do it all by hand. It's a bit similar sort of logic to if you have a dishwasher and you find yourself having to constantly re-clean everything because the filter's not very good. So, you know, what's the point in doing it the supposedly more efficient way if you're going to end up having to patch it by hand anyway?
Oh boy.
Remember to keep the rattle can at least 12 inches away from the miniature. Right?
Someday the recurring nightmares will go away.
He was traumatized by his 12 and 13 year old self spraying something during humid weather. He's never used it since. All right, well, I've got one more cruel and sadistic question here. I don't even know if this one applies for Kerry. He's kind of already there. Get every model that you ever wanted, but you can never paint any of them. Or only be able to have one army at a time, but you can paint it to a high level.
That's a good question. That's a tough one.
Green skins, baby. One army to any level.
This is Brian's life.
See, again, tricky question. Because I essentially have what most people would consider all the armies in an unpainted state. And so what you end up at, most people, they're getting their one main army perfectly painted and losing a few others that aren't favorites. But to me, the balance here is, do I stay more or less exactly as I am now with no fully painted armies, just a few painted units here and there, the odd model, or do I give up how many am I on now? Do I give about 25 different armies just to have one painted? So no, I would stick with all armies but unpainted, because there is no way I'd be giving up that many separate armies to start again.
So Ryan, the question was, I can have one painted army or I can have all the armies unpainted?
Any armies you wanted unpainted,
yeah. But I can change out the one army over time?
Correct. So you could, once you got it painted or whatever, you could change and get a different army and paint it up to a high level.
Yeah, I'll take the one army at a time.
Yeah, I think I'd agree.
I think I'd go with that as well.
Well, I can't think of the last time I played a game without painted models. So that would be, like, ideal.
Ooh, hoo, hoo, look who's so fancy. Well, Evan.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, you have well, some lovely yes. armies. I would definitely want to paint with, or I would only want to play with painted if I had armies such as yours. They look glorious.
Yeah, I don't know. I have nothing against someone that wants to play with a unpainted army. A lot of my opponents play with unpainted armies. But
damn, just calling out Paul like that?
Was that shade at Sylve, or was that someone else?
Just all of them. Just all
Oh, throwing down the gauntlet. Got it. Okay.
No, but just going back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show, which is, you know, the game's about the spectacle to me. So I want my stuff to look a certain way when I put it on the table. So if I had one army that's painted to a really awesome level, you know, I would choose something that I really loved. And I would do that. And then, if I grew tired of it, you could always change it out. So.
Well, this one definitely came from the heart as I was scraping mold lines off of Skaven models and realizing how many Skaven models I had to paint, and looking at the 5 storm vermin that I have.
I think
painted.
Is that the same thought that literally every Skaven player has, like 10 minutes into starting to build that army?
My previously completed army was vampire counts with 100 skeletons, so it's not like I've been making wise decisions in my life.
Just that crushing realization that this is your life for the next year of your hobby.
It's always funny when you spend a lot of time building, buying, and painting an army, and you know before you're even really playing with it that it's like a bad army, and you're like, this army is gonna suck, and I'm putting a lot of my life's effort into it. And
are you thinking of your past few months painting Bestigors so that you could have 80 Bestigors?
I'm thinking about my goblins. I'm thinking about my beastmen. I'm just like, these armies are all trash. I don't even know why I spend so much time and effort. And like,
because you're going to play me, and so you know you're okay. It'll be all okay.
The irony of the bad armies is that they're so model intensive, whereas like the good armies are like less model intensive, so you have to do less work and you get a great army, whereas I'm doing a ton of work and I get a crap army. It's like, what is this?
I agree, because aren't ogres pretty decent? Yeah. And they're just an incredibly low model count.
I mean, all the
army.
Elves are considered pretty much the best armies, and you know they're fairly low model count.
So. Mm-hmm. Elves, ogres are pretty good.
Warriors of Chaos, demons of Chaos.
Yeah, is there a horde army that's actually like A tier or S tier?
I mean, Skaven's the best one, probably.
They're up there.
And then Vampire Counts is pretty good too. But there's so many different ways.
Well, yeah, and they're not strong because of their horde. Or their hordes of.
Yeah, no, the horde exists so that there's a point cost, and then the good stuff is everything else.
Wait, Ryan, I think you did have one more question. Would you rather play as high elves or admit that dark elves are a top tier army?
Mike, would you like to answer this one first?
Listen. Here's how it is. All right. I think a lot about Warhammer, and I spent a good amount of time thinking about the old Dark Elves that I've been building them the last few months, and I know High Elves are busted, and I'll be the first one to tout the horn and say by far the strongest army. Well, okay, there's a toss-up between them and Wood Elves, just for various reasons. But I don't think Dark Elves are a top-tier army. I'm not of that opinion. I think they're by far the weakest of the Elves, and I think they can be very good if you dedicate your army building to a very specific way. But I think pretty much all their infantry is trash, including Witch Elves, because they're frenzied, and frenzied stuff goes places where you don't want it to go all the time.
So what's your answer to that question, then?
I don't even remember.
It was, would you rather play as High Elves or admit that Dark Elves are a top-tier army?
I would love to play as High Elves and just walk all over my opponent every once in a while.
I don't like playing High Elves at all. I did a game quite recently. I think it was probably my most recent full game that wasn't interrupted by small children. And I was playing High Elves. My brother was playing Vampire Counts. If we took a look about the midpoint of the game, I have lost a unit of Reavers. He has lost his general and 75% of his army.
Oof.
So I actually playing stupidly through the last three Sea Guard into a combat because narratively it made sense, even though I was throwing away 250 points. And so we ended up with the points looking like it was still a crushing victory. I still had twice as many victory points as him by a mile, but it looked a lot more respectable at the end than it really was for the entire game, which was just High Elves beating Vampire Counts over the head with magic superiority, range superiority, and combat superiority. So High Elves are definitely not something that I enjoy playing.
Right. That seems pretty common.
Yeah.
There's no bad phase. You're getting destroyed on the way there, and then in combat they're wrecking you as well.
And GW had the balls to make goblins fear them with a rule.
Yep, they certainly do. Yeah. Goblins aren't bad enough. You know, we need extra bad rules.
Well, we'll just ask Mike that question every episode until he answers it.
There we go. That's a good call. We'll just keep going. Although they're throwing this out there, knowing what recordings already exist, there may be two recordings where we don't ask him that question. But starting after that,
we can just record it. You can add it on to the end.
All right. Well, I think we have a couple of user questions. Someone wants to start because of this amazing game and introduction podcast, wants to get started in playing Warhammer. Where should they go for models?
So what I'd recommend is just go on eBay, put in job lot Warhammer, see what comes up. Start adding more terms as you will. You know, add in fantasy, add in the name of the army, or add in something vague, like a bit more vague, like job lot Warhammer elves, and see what comes up.
It's a good start.
Because you get a lot of people who it's either theirs, or it's their siblings, or it's their friends, and they've got their eBay selling account. They don't actually want the hassle of valuing anything or individually wrapping anything, and really just want it out of the house.
Okay. Is there anyone here? I don't think any of us are big into 3D. Well, Kerry, you might be big into 3D printing. Do you do a lot of that?
Before this is sort of presented as a catch-all, solve all problems, getting a 3D printer and learning how to do it is essentially a different hobby in itself. So you would have Warhammer, and then you would have to learn this whole other hobby that might branch out and become its own thing. But in theory, if you have a 3D printer and can work a 3D printer, then you can produce an army incredibly cheaply with a lot more customization in some ways than if you are restricted to just what is on the open market for sale. Equally, you can track down STLs and purchase those to be printed, and so do a mix and match that way. Again, more customizable than if you're stuck just within, say, the published GW model range. And finally, if you want to go down that route, you can professionally commission things to be done if there's nothing that quite matches your own tastes. Something that I've actually gaining some experience of since most of this episode was recorded, this is a re-record, but something I definitely want to touch upon in later episodes as progress reports, because yes, I may have found an alternative way of producing a Southlands army that doesn't involve having to green stuff things myself. So we'll come back to this in future episodes.
Yeah, I don't believe in resin, so
I'd say, like, there's MiniSwap on Reddit, and there's Bartertown that you can look at, and sometimes you can get lots. But first things first would be to look at the GW website and see if any of the models are still in print as AOS models. Yeah. So you might be able to find that some of them are there. And this is important because people on eBay are going to scalp you. And so you're going to go and look at, for example, the Skaven models I've been looking at recently. They're going to want to sell you a Doom Wheel for $60, and GW sells it for right. $38. So look at what GW has. After you've determined what they have and what they don't have, then go and you can look at eBay. But really the cheapest place you're going to find things is at MiniSwap, Bartertown, or other lot sites, eBay, searching for large sales.
A couple other places I use are Mindtaker, which does post some of their stuff on eBay, but I don't think it's all on there. But they have their own site where you can just buy miniatures a la carte. And there's also the Shop Goodwill site that there's a lot of Games Workshop stuff that shows up on there. It's not always... It doesn't always have good photos. They don't really know what they're working with a lot of the time, but there are a lot of cool things that show up on there.
And on the books, PDFs are available. So, those books are out of print. And so while you're learning the game, before you figure out what army you have, I mean, I love having the paper copy of the book with me, and I suggest getting it for whatever your army you have. But until then, you can find a PDF copy. Because otherwise, in 8th Ed, they're really expensive.
If you do go the 3D printing route, or you do buy something from GW that doesn't have square bases aren't hard to find on eBay. You need to do is... Or if you need more particular square bases that are harder to find, like a 50 by 100 or something bigger that is a less ordinary, I use Shogun Miniatures. They'll cut custom bases for you. And if you find yourself, you have miniatures, but you don't have square bases, you can go to eBay, you can type in 25 by 25 millimeter square base, you know, things will come up. 25 by 50 millimeter square base, things will come up. And if you need something more custom, you can go over to Shogun Miniatures and you can talk to them, send them an email, tell them the dimensions you need, and they can cut something for you.
Yeah, I'll second Shogun for movement trays.
So if you have any more questions about how to play Warhammer, if you're just interested in lore, if you're interested in gameplay, or if you're interested in the hobby aspect, feel free to jump onto the Warhammer Fantasy Battle Discord. As I said before, if you go to the subreddit, the Discord link is there. You could probably search it and find it online. So feel free to jump on. We're all there. I'm Ryan. There's Mike, Evan, Brian, and Carrie. We're all here, and we thank you for listening. All right, well, that's all we have for today. We hope that next month you'll gather around the Hearthstone with us again.